Hey, Nick.
Hey, Scott.
So, I've been thinking about something.
Yeah.
Lately, and a lot of this has to do with having seen Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles last night,
which I have not.
Yeah, and I'm not gonna get into that because you know we're gonna do that review special for Mind Robber soon, and so we'll talk about it then. But I was thinking about nostalgia.
Oh, okay.
Just like how. I don't know the effects of nostalgia and like how much nostalgia is behind certain projects getting off the ground and things. You know, like you've got Lionsgate doing that Power Rangers movie next, you know, and I'm looking at this Ninja Turtle movie and just realizing like, oh, like I guess it could be something like this. that's like a possibility. Yeah. Well, and the idea of, nostalgia and like in the case of you know like the Ninja Turtle movie, it's like who is the movie for? You know, like is it for new people? Because I've heard people say like, oh, it's a kids movie, and it's like, well, if it's a kids movie, it's kind of a failure of a kids movie because it's a PG-13 movie. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's PG-13 is not a kids movie. Like, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, sure. It's interesting for me. I think about that a lot because I have two nephews who are sort of they're collectively in like the fourth and first grade, and so I get to watch them come of age in this era of like pop culture and entertainment, you know, because I mean they're not exactly like the way I was when I was a kid. They're both way more like athletic, but they're both in love with like the Avengers and Star Wars. And the younger one is really into Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, like hardcore. And he's got all the dudes from the new series. It's on Nickelodeon.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, he loves it. He knows all of them, and he comes over to my childhood home. Because like they're all in the same area, roughly. They come home and we kept all of my toys like in a box, and we took them down from the attic a few years ago just because like, oh, like they have use again. Like, why keep them? You know, we have children. This is awesome. And so he comes over and he gets so psyched because he gets to play with my Ninja Turtle toys that I had when I was his age, and it's cool that he is similarly into this this thing that was a big part of my childhood growing up. Mm-hmm. But it's also kind of weird that he and I are almost 20 years apart in age, and we have roughly the same idols and heroes in our lives. Like, I think something happened after Star Wars came out, from Star Wars to Optimus Prime to now, where we haven't really been in the business of creating new icons, just reusing the old ones.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it's a bad thing in the larger scope of you know, of life in America or anything, but it is a really interesting side effect that in the time between my coming of age and now his process of coming of age, nothing's really changed. Everything's almost kind of stayed the same. But you look out, you go to a toy store and it's Optimus Prime and Spider-Man and like, yeah, I guess maybe I wasn't really into Iron Man when I was eight, but he was still in the pop. He was still in the landscape, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting. I'm not gonna say that it's a good or a bad thing. I just think it's a really interesting thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. It's it's this weird thing where they're like trying to balance the idea of like making something for the people who used to like it and making it for new people, you know?
Yeah.
Find that problematic.
Because in the process of trying to please everyone, the movie ends up pleasing no one.
Right, exactly. Whereas, like, it's weird because that new Ninja Turtle animated series,
sure,
it's not trying to please old fans, but mm-hmm. it's doing that anyway. Like,
sure,
I haven't spoken to a fan of Ninja Turtles who doesn't like that show. Like, it's a great show, but it's nothing like any version of the Ninja Turtles that's ever come before. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it's inspired by things like Teen Titans, you know, it's
sure.
got that style that, like, every once in a while it'll sort of like delve into little anime, you know?
Yeah. Because that's become the common visual language for children younger than me, like a little bit. And like, cause I Teen Titans is one of the last cartoons I watched regularly.
Right.
Cause I was like in high school. And I remember, like, when the anime stuff would come in, I immediately understood what was being communicated on, like, a subconscious level because I watched a shitload of, like, Sailor Moon and Dragon Ball Z and, like, Yu Yu Hakusho.
Right.
And I can't imagine that, like, that stopped, you know?
Right.
So, yeah, and, like, if we go back to, like, the Lego movie is absolutely a children's movie, but it's also like a really well-made movie. It's almost like maybe it's a result of like adult fans not letting go, or maybe like the studio thinking that maybe like we need adults to like come in and buy tickets. I don't know. I'm kind of at a loss.
Yeah. Yeah, so am I.
'Cause to me, a really good Ninja Turtles movie, which I assume this one isn't. I haven't seen it yet, but I mean, it looks very viscerally ugly from what mm-hmm. I've seen from like trailers.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, a good Ninja Turtles movie isn't unlike like a Guardians of the Galaxy movie, where it's about like the things that I always loved about the Ninja Turtles was their like camaraderie and like their sense of like brotherhood and family and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, to make a good Ninja Turtles movie, you just need like really fun, zippy, blockbuster writing, and then like charming actors and charming like character design, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're great characters. I mean, and that's what people seem to forget is they get so wrapped up. I find that nostalgia weirdly. I find that people get distracted by the plot of things because it's funny because whenever I talk to people who are like nostalgic about Power Rangers, for example,
mm-hmm.
the thing that they always talk about are the plots, which is
really
confusing. Yeah, which is confusing to me because it's like, okay, but it was a kid's show. Like it's not whatever you're remembering, the show was not as good as you're remembering it.
No,
you know?
Yeah. If anything, to me, when I wrote a screenplay that I really want to make someday called Queen Witch,
mm-hmm.
and the kind of base inspiration for when I wrote Queen Witch was like I wanted to write a movie that was as good as I remember like Disney Channel original movies around Halloween being.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's kind of where, because we look at Power Rangers, you know,
mm-hmm.
I loved Power Rangers as a kid. It was epic. It was like massive in scope, the characters right. and the monsters. I know it wasn't as good as it was when I was 8.
Right. Exactly.
But I really hope the new Power Rangers movie is as good as I remember. I hope it makes me feel the way it made me feel when I was like a kid, you know?
Right, which is all that you want, you
yeah.
know? Like, that's really all that you want, but
You don't want the thing. You want the feeling.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
I remember I think I've told you this before, but I was reading a few years ago, I read this book called Burton on Burton. It was like Tim Burton looking back on his like career from like early days to Big Fish. I think Big Fish or Charlie and the Chocolate Factory was like where the book ended at that point.
Okay.
And he was they were designing Frank and Weenie, like old OG Frank and Weenie.
Mm-hmm.
Oh no, I'm sorry. It was Vincent. It was like the short film Vincent.
Okay.
And he was having like a meeting with all the animators, and he was like, you know, like Bela Lugosi like Frankenstein, Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, like really like old school black and white, like universal horror movies. Like that's what I want. Like those like Saturday afternoon black and white sci-fi movies they would play like on TV. And the animator was like, okay, do you know where we could get a hold of some of these? And Tim Burton was like, no. I don't want you to watch it. I don't want you to copy it. I want you to remember what those movies looked like in your brain and then draw that.
Yes.
Because that way it's coming from a real place and you're not aping anything, but you have enough visceral memory of it in your brain and in your heart that if you try drawing it, it'll come out the way that it felt.
Yeah.
And
so smart. See, yeah. there's a reason that guy, I mean, it sucks that he sort of got stuck with this this whole like remake thing.
Sure.
Because it's kind of, he just Tim Burtonizes things, you know, that's kind of his deal.
Mm-hmm.
Very rarely does he do an original story. But it's there's a reason that guy's he works so well and why people have such a visceral reaction one way or the other to Tim Burton stuff.
Yeah. Are you familiar with Kate Leth or Leith?
Or no?
Anyway, she's this comic book writer. She has a really strong presence on Tumblr. Okay. It's like called Kate or Die. And she's really talented, really.
Yeah, I know that. Yeah.
She writes a lot of like Adventure Time books.
Right. Yeah.
And anyway, she was just signed on to do Boom Studios is doing a sequel-ish thing to Edward Scissorhands.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like the lead writer on it. Mm-hmm. And she has a podcast. And hearing her talk about it, it was like, this is so weird because this was kind of a defining thing in my childhood. And now getting to add to the mythos is like a really weird, incredible like honor and all that. Mm-hmm. And she was like, we really wanted to just continue that story and not do like, he's at another house. You know what I mean? So she like that. There's an example of being handed the keys to your thing as a kid. And like, what do you do with it?
Yeah.
It's a really interesting challenge. Because like, that's the thing, man. Like, I don't want to speak out of turn, but I just get the feeling that maybe Jonathan Lipson didn't have a Ninja Turtle lunchbox.
Yeah, well, no, I don't think that's true. I think he did.
Okay.
I think he did, but I think he thought that what he loved about it was the plots and not the
character.
Not the characters.
I mean, because like the stories in the cartoons that I watched, I didn't watch the Fox Box thing.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk about this on the podcast, but like they're kind of dumb.
Yeah. Oh no, they are. They're super like, dumb.
Like the Shredder would be dumb. The Shredder would be like gonna go poison the water supply. April would be like nah, and then Kang would be like get her, and the Turtles would be like let's kill him.
Yeah.
Let's kill him. No, they
never said. Let's kill him.
That's their first tweet. Let's kill him.
That's the thing. It's like it feels like a misunderstanding of what everyone loves about the Turtles. That's what the movie feels like. It feels like he's like, oh, let's make the Turtles cool and updated for today.
No.
And that seems like what he's trying to do. And then he's like sort of just missing the point entirely.
Yeah.
But I feel like there's something there in the movie that makes me believe that Jonathan Lipson did have a Turtles lunchbox. Like I feel like it.
Yeah, yeah.
But not in like not in a way that the movie's in any way good.
I mean, here's the thing. We were a few weeks ago. What? No, a few days ago. I was having kind of like a dumb, useless Twitter argument with like a kind of a movie. He used to be a movie writer, and I don't know what he does now. But
Adam Quigley.
Adam Quigley. Yeah. He was like, "Why do we need female superheroes?" And I'm not having that conversation. But my thing was his thing was there's no if you go through Marvel's back catalog, there's no female character who's powerful enough or interesting enough as a character to warrant being the face of a movie franchise. And my kind of thing that I don't think I was able to communicate with him through Twitter, surprise, surprise, was that you shouldn't just look at the source of it. Like, what I couldn't seem to get through his head was that Star-Lord is probably one of the lesser characters in the Marvel canon in terms of being interesting or exciting. If you go back to the old school source material, you know? But I think there was enough there to where, like, James Gunn was able to make him exciting or cool. Like, I don't think you should just stick to the source material. I think the source material should maybe be used in a purer way to inspire something new. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, I 100% agree. And I think that that's, you know, that's important. Like, that's what makes a thing stand out. I mean, that's what makes the Ninja Turtle cartoon on Nickelodeon right now works so well.
Yeah, because no one's ever done it like that.
Right. Yeah. No one's actually made the Ninja Turtles be teenagers before. Like, that's, which seems ridiculous. Teenage is literally in the title.
It's the first part.
Right, exactly. It seems to be like it would be the most important part of the title, but this is literally the first time that I've ever read or seen anything where the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles were actually teenagers.
And, like, are they dealing with, like, teenage problems?
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. And, you know, and everyone complained about how, like, oh, April O'Neil and Casey Jones are going to make them teenagers. Like, that's dumb. No, it's not. It's Why? Not dumb.
They're friends. They're all friends.
Yeah. No, what's dumber is that you have teenage turtles hanging out with a mid-30s April O'Neil. Like, that's weird.
Hey, April, like, it's almost kind of, and again, like, I haven't really, I've seen a couple episodes of it, but it seems to me like it makes it kind of more fun from the audience perspective of, like, April, because it's almost like April just gets, like, four, like, imaginary friends.
Yeah. Yeah, in a lot of ways, yeah. Yeah, it's, I don't know. It's weird, because, I mean, what you said is, like, exactly spot on, and that's what makes that show work. Is that, you know, they yes, they're doing cool things with the lore, the mythology.
Kang and whatnot.
Right. But they're also, you know, going back to just, like, the basic concept and being like, what would a show called Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles be like? Well, should be about teenagers and being a teenager, but also having, like, all of this responsibility because you blame yourself for all of this crazy stuff that's happening.
Yeah. But also the isolation of being a mutant.
Right. Yeah, it's just a really great show. And, like, from the standpoint of, you know, 20-minute episodes, you could really, like, it's like screenwriting 101, that show.
Sure, just how they're able to kind of perfectly encapsulate, like, a problem.
Yeah, like a just an arc. Like, you know, usually one character has a focus and, you know, the first scene sets up what the problem is and then, you know, the next bit tells you what the plot of the story is, and then you realize, like, what the theme is going to be, and then it all comes back around by the end, like, yeah. Every single episode.
Like, Michelangelo can't meditate.
Yeah.
He wants to go out and, like, go to a, like, scary movie or something.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I just watched one yesterday that involved Michelangelo wanting pizza. I mean, it was that simple. Like, he wanted pizza and he didn't want to wait for delivery, so he, like, made his own pizza. And
like a bottle episode?
Well, no, it wasn't really a bottle episode, but basically, like, what happens is, like, they get this they get the pizza that they always go to gets taken over by, like, a mutant pizza guy named Pizza Face.
Okay.
And the pizzas, like, talk, like, when they deliver to you, and then they, like, attach themselves to your face, and you become, like, a pizza zombie.
Oh, like a face hugger.
Yeah, kind of like a face hugger. Yeah, like a combination of, like, a face hugger and, like, those horrifying turkey headed aliens in Half-Life.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of like that. And then like Michelangelo like has to prove that like he's not crazy, and then all of his brothers become pizza faces and pizza face zombies, and then he has to defeat the pizza face by himself. It's really funny episode.
Sure, yeah.
Because it's ridiculous. But it's the idea of like just seeing like a whole arc of a character in this, and the arc of this is basically that his stomach is always causing him trouble. Like he made like a terrible pizza for his brothers, and they're just like, God, you couldn't just wait until we could get a real pizza? Like, this is horrible. and you know, they're always saying like, you being hungry and you always eating is always causing trouble. And then of course, what's the one thing that gets him out of the trouble with pizza face is that he eats his way out of the problem.
Sure. He just eats pizza face a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, from the inside. It's horrifying.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, they do it in silhouette to make it even creepier. yeah, and so, like, you know, it's not like a story that you're just going to be like, whoa. You know, like,
yeah,
that was amazing.
It's but just like, oh, look at that.
You'll yeah, it's a lesson. It's a full arc, you know? Full
yeah.
circle kind of arc.
Animation, dude.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm gonna admit something. About 4 years ago now, I had just I was bedridden over like the summer for like 2 weeks or 3 weeks.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't anything serious. I can't even remember what it was, but I was sick in bed, and it was summer, and I was like 18, and I was like, wah. And I was on social media. I was on like Twitter, and everyone was like, oh, there's a My Little Pony show, and it's like really good, guys. It's really good. And I was like, My Little Pony, it's good. That's weird. And then I kept seeing, like, GIFs and stuff, you know, like, just stuff. And I was like, well, that actually looks like kind of cool animation. That's cool. And then I kind of looked it up, and I was like, oh, my God, Lauren Faust from, mm-hmm. like, Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends. Oh, my God, Robert Zetti from My Life as a Teenage Robot.
Mm-hmm.
This was, like, their next show. And I was like, oh, it's all probably illegally. It's all on YouTube. Okay, I'll watch a little bit, and I watched like a bunch of episodes of My Little Pony Friendship is Magic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and like it was kind of like it's kind of reminded me of what you're talking about with Ninja Turtles, where like the and I haven't watched it since I got out of bed. Like I don't watch it anymore, but like yeah, like they were just really cool little like slices of story cake.
Yeah.
And like it was really cool because like the moral lesson at the end was always something really nuanced,
right?
I was like, oh, I don't think I've actually ever seen a children's show do this before. Like, I remember there was an episode where like, hey, sometimes your friends aren't going to be able to hang out with you, but it's just because they're busy. It's not because they don't like you. And I remember being 18 and like kind of being like, oh wow, yeah, I guess it is kind of true. That kind of improved the quality of my life by like 2%. You know what I mean? I was like, this is cool. And then I went on DeviantArt and then I saw what was really happening here. And then I kind of closed my laptop and never opened it again.
Fair enough.
It was like, are you a brony? And I'm like, I think I am. I really like this show. Oh, cool. And they opened the door and I was like, oh, no, my God.
It's horrifying. that's the thing. I think you can learn a lot from animation. And animated series because they have to be so contained. It's like watching a little 20-minute short film.
Yeah.
In a way that more serialized television isn't, you know? Like you can't learn the same things from something like Korra or Last Airbender that you can from, you know,
Breaking Bad.
Well, no. I mean, sticking to animation.
Oh.
I mean, you can't learn the same thing from those that you can from like Ninja Turtles or
Yeah, whatever. Yeah.
Because like, you're meant to be able to come into any episode and watch it, you know?
In terms of joy, in terms of like just sheer joy, one of my favorite shows on television right now is a regular show.
Mm.
Just because every time me and my roommate would just like fuck off 5 hours from our lives just like watching regular show and just they would make us so happy in like 20 yeah. minutes because they were so funny and weird and like epic, like but like an like a parody of epic.
Mm-hmm. And, isn't that that show that's like takes place in the park, right?
It's about a raccoon named Rigby and like a blue jay named Mordecai that just work at a park.
It reminds me a lot of like mid to late 90s Nicktoons.
Yeah, yeah, it really is. It's like everything's like the background is allowed to be dirty.
Yeah.
And it's just a really kind of like it's way more sitcom. Like Adventure Time is cool. I love Adventure Time, but whereas Adventure Time is more like Hayao Miyazaki absurdism, This is more like MTV, like early '90s MTV sitcom. But like they're all animals.
Yeah, I've also heard that. What is that show called? Gravity Falls? I hear people talk about that all the time.
I really like Gravity Falls. I haven't seen that much of it, but that's another one where it's just really gentle, but also really smart and subversive in a way that isn't like mean.
Yeah.
There's an episode about the toxicity of the mindset of the friend zone.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and there's this other really great episode I saw where Maybell, like the sister, voiced by Kristen Schaal, because you can't. Why would you not have Kristen Schaal on your animated show?
It's true.
And there's this kid who's like maybe a little bit younger than her that does this thing where she thinks that she's just like his friend, like they're just like kind of acquaintances at best. And one time they're at like a malt shop or a restaurant or something. And he very publicly asks her out on a date in front of everyone in a very kind of like cutesy way. Mm-hmm. And the crowd sort of like, oh, do it. Yeah, look, he's so cute. And even though she doesn't want to, she feels like forced to agree to it.
Uh-huh.
And the episode is about even though someone might be coming from like, even though someone might like you or has good intentions, you are not obligated to be in a relationship that you're not comfortable with.
Right.
And like you're allowed to like let this person – you're allowed to not – you're allowed to say no.
Wow. That's great. Like,
yeah.
I'm so impressed that an animated series with that kind of message comes out.
Yeah, and it's done like in a very non-preachy way.
Yeah.
Or just
like, and I know that it's not like a huge, huge hit. That show, like I think it does fine, and it's like a big hit on Tumblr and stuff for a good reason, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it's not like Adventure Time huge, but remember? Adventure Time, I mean, I get it. I get why people like it. It's the same. It's for the same reason that people really like SpongeBob SquarePants. Like I kind of put them on the same category.
Interesting.
Those two shows. Because, like, I don't know. Like, I find Adventure Time weird. Because I remember listening to an interview with the creator on one of the writing podcasts that I listened to. And he said that show is structured in a way that, like, you know, any show. So, like, they set up a problem. And the example he gave was, like, okay, say the problem is you can't save everyone. Like, that's the thing that he has to learn. I forget what the main character's name is.
Finn.
What is his name?
Finn.
Finn. Okay. So that's the thing that Finn needs to learn. Like you can't save everyone. Right. And so they spend the whole, like, I think they're what, 10 minute episodes, right?
Yeah. Like 11, like SpongeBob episodes.
Right. So they spend the whole episode, like just hammering home, like Finn, you can't save everyone. Finn, you can't save everyone. Finn, you can't save everyone. And then and then Finn realizes, like, there'll be a scene toward the end of the episode where Finn will be like, I guess I can't save everyone. Or, you know, you'll be able to tell that he's thinking that. And then he'll have the dog be like, see, Finn, like, you know, no matter how hard you try, you can't save everyone. And if in any other show, he'd be like, yeah, I guess you're right. And then that would be the end of the episode. But because it's Adventure Time, instead, you know, the dog says that, and then Finn says, yes, I fucking can, and then he just goes and saves everyone.
Yeah. That definitely sounds like, yeah, a bunch of episodes that I've seen.
Yeah. And so, like, he's like, that's what Adventure Time is. He's like, we go right to the edge of teaching someone a lesson, and then we completely undo it. And I'm like, well, I mean, that's entertaining, I guess, but I don't know if that's sending kids the right message.
I also don't. I also think he's kind of being unfair, because I definitely, I would argue that the characters have grown in like the 4 years that the show's been on. Like Jake's a father now.
Oh, weird. That's the dog, right?
Yeah, the dog. Him and Lady Rainicorn had like several like puppy horse dog things. And like they're weird and gross, but like really cute. And I definitely think that Adventure Time and SpongeBob share absurdism, where like there'll be non sequiturs and like really weird like animation and like kind of like they really just say that humor, but not like in a gross way, just like in a whoa, like that episode of SpongeBob where they go on a panty raid.
Yeah.
But also one of the really more underrated aspects of Adventure Time is the world building.
Yeah, I've heard that.
There's like a real mythology that the show doesn't bail on and like continues like to grow and sort of delve deeper, where like we find out that Adventure Time basically takes place in like post-apocalyptic Earth. But it's like after the apocalypse, where like civilization has regrown, but just Finn's the only human that survived the process. And like Finn and Jake kind of are learning more about it. Like it turns out that like Marceline, the Vampire Queen, and the Ice King were like friends in the days immediately following the apocalypse. But then something happened to the Ice King and he became the Ice King as we know him. And then that, what we know now, informs those two characters' relationships moving forward.
That's crazy.
Yeah, where we'll be like, oh no, but they used to be, but he doesn't remember. But then the show will still put the emphasis on like the weird random adventures. But now the weird random adventures are being like weighted by what we know now about these characters. Like, Marceline and Bubblegum Princess used to be, like, really good friends. Actually, I've heard that they wanted to just flatly say that they used to be a romantic, like, couple. But Cartoon Network was like, no, we're not comfortable with that. And so now the show, they just use every opportunity to get as close as they can to, like, hinting that. Without it being, like, on the nose.
Yeah.
Where it's kind of like how in Sailor Moon, there were those two Sailor Scouts that were dating, but in the American dub, they just like change words around to where they're cousins.
Right, Saturn and Uranus, I think.
Yes, yeah, right? I think so.
Yeah. Oh, that's another thing, man. Speaking of nostalgia, I would love to watch that new, that new Sailor Moon cartoon. But you know what bugs me, and I know this is like me being a stupid American, and again, the nostalgia thing, I can't get over the fact that her name isn't Serena. I can't do it. I can't do it.
In the new one?
Yeah, her name's like, you know, some Japanese name, like...
Like Yuki or...
Yuki, yeah, something like that. I can't get over it. Like, she's Serena. Like,
oh, because that wasn't her name in the original Japanese one, probably.
It was always like her name was always Yuki, like in the manga and the original Japanese anime and everything.
Yeah, and then like in the early 90s they were like, nope, it's Serena.
Yeah.
Which is a great
the
name.
The Canada whatever, BIC? D?
Yeah. Oh my god, BIC.
Yeah, BIC. Like they
that logo would make me really nostalgic just like seeing it.
Oh yeah. I kind of wish that they would do the English dubbing for this, just because like I don't know. That's Sailor Moon to me.
Yeah, no, it's very iconic.
Yeah.
I remember there was a period where it was just always on Toonami.
Yeah, that's when I watched it the most too. It was like right after school. It was like that and Reboot and Dragon Ball Z.
Oh, totally. Yeah, that was my after school.
Yeah.
But it would just so happen that whenever Sailor Moon would be on, it was always around the time that my dad would come home from work. And my dad, totally loving, totally like open dude, I have a very good relationship, but like he would just come home from work and the first thing he would be like, hi guys, I'm home, and then he would just see me watching Sailor Moon and you would just see him kind of like half deflate, just like all right. The boy's still watching the
I almost wonder if there is a direct correlation between guys who watched Sailor Moon as a kid, like growing up, and those guys being feminists.
I don't know. I definitely think, because I don't remember ever seeing why it was weird to be watching Sailor Moon.
Yeah.
Like, as a boy, as a young boy, I was just never, I never felt any, and I'm not fucking bragging or anything, but it never hit me why this would be something that a boy shouldn't be watching.
No, me either. I didn't realize it until, you know, I was in high school and would talk about watching Sailor Moon and people would just be like staring at me. Like,
really?
My guy what? Friends would just be like, what? Why would you watch that?
With like the sparkles and everything? And I was like, she's an empress of the moon. Like,
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because I was always, my favorite show at the time was Sailor Moon and then Reboot. And then Dragon Ball Z was just sort of like on in the background. Like my brothers liked it, but I didn't really like it.
Sure.
I thought it was a lot of like screaming.
I love Dragon Ball Z, but I loved it in the way that I kind of love Gossip Girl, where I'll be like, okay, it's one of those episodes of Dragon Ball Z where they're just going to be standing in the desert talking about how powerful they're going to be as soon as they're done charging.
Right. Well, yeah, I forget where I heard that joke before, but like the Dragon Ball Z joke where it's like, previously on Dragon Ball Z, today on Dragon Ball Z, next time on Dragon Ball Z,
and then like, they fight. Yeah.
It just keeps going and going.
And I remember there would be times where like I'd have to do homework. Mm-hmm. And my mom was like, Nick, today you have to do homework. I'm like, oh, but Dragon Ball Z, Dragon Ball Z. And then I would watch it, and it would just be like, and I was like, no, God damn it, not this one. And then it would be like, next time on Dragon Ball Z, they're going to fight. And my mom, and then I'd be like, Mom, that one didn't count. I have to watch tomorrow's too. I was like, I totally could have missed this one. This one was just bullshit.
Oh, man. Yeah. I don't know. So I do hope that the English dub is... doesn't stay true to, I know that sounds terrible, but I really hope it doesn't stay true to like the Japanese original, because that's not what I want.
No, totally. Sailor Moon. Yeah, no, I bet there is kind of a correlation, just in that, like, the fact of like just at an early age, maybe just seeing like, oh, like heroes, oh, like they're strong characters, you know what I mean? Because that wasn't why I wasn't like, oh yes, finally females are being represented equally. I was like seven. I just really thought it was cool.
Yeah.
And in the same way that like I loved like Buffy when I was in high school.
Yeah.
Because I was like, this is like the best show ever made.
Really, I think Sailor Moon has a lot in common with Ninja Turtles in the way that I watch those two shows.
Yeah, it's about a team.
Yeah.
It kind of deals with...
They're sisters, though they're brothers, you know, but it's kind of the same deal, you know?
It's... I remember...
I mean, early, not literally sisters, but you know what I mean.
Sure. Like, yeah, a sisterhood. Like a sisterhood of the traveling pants kind of thing.
Yeah.
Sisterhood. Sorority. Yeah. But I remember... I remember, like, they were always... The Sailor Scouts were from very different walks of life. I remember they all hated Serena because she kind of sucked. Well, she sucked at the beginning. She was kind of like, yeah. You would, you know, there'd be an episode where, like, someone was making Sailor, like, Jupiter feel bad about being such, like, a smarty pants or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then, like, oh, well, because she studied, she can save the people from the spaghetti monster, you know?
Yeah.
That's something I wouldn't mind seeing updated in a cool way.
What?
Sailor Moon.
Well, I mean, isn't that what they're doing?
I mean, like, maybe, like, in a, like, a big screen fashion.
Oh, yeah. Didn't they try to do that at one point?
Probably.
I thought they did.
In, like, a Dragon Ball Evolution kind of way?
Maybe. I don't know. I thought there was, like, a live-action TV show or something at some point.
Oh, yeah. Probably in Japan.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe that's what it was. Well, yeah, and I mean that's the other thing too that I always find really confusing about anime stuff is I mean it's pretty much understood that like in most anime things, unless it's like, you know, specifically saying like this takes place in Tokyo. I mean they're drawing American characters because they find them more interesting. Than themselves, like that's you. But then whenever you cast white people, like people are like, oh, they're whitewashing it. I was like, But isn't that what they're doing? Like, didn't they whitewash it first? I thought, like, they did. I'm confused.
Well, like, it's interesting because, like, yeah, I remember growing up watching anime and not really understanding that it came from Japan at first.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Just kind of like, oh, this is a really interesting style.
Yeah, the first time I realized that was, I think there was an episode of Dragon Ball Z where Goku, like, outright said that they were in Tokyo or something.
We're in Tokyo.
And I was like, wait, what? And I was like, oh, is this, wait a minute, is this all Japan? Like, and then I got really confused and started looking into things and was like, yeah. Oh, anime. Japanese anime.
I was wondering why they all kind of look, never mind. I was wondering why these characters kind of look the same in style.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, like, I remember there was, like, an episode of Digimon where, like, they're eating, like, a rice ball, being like, that's a funny thing to be eating. Oh, hey. Well, because Digimon's interesting because the fact that it's in Japan actually plays a very important part of, like, the story.
Right.
Where it's like, we're in Japan. Oh, like, they're in, like, Nakatomi Plaza. Hidden View Terrace. I'm like, that's, like, a real place. It's Hidden View Terrace. And I'm like, Nakatomi Plaza. And then, like, there's, like, parts where they go to visit other countries. Like, they go to America.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, fun. This is cool.
Yeah. Yeah, so I don't know. It's funny because I do wonder about stuff like that. Like, I wonder if, you know, the Japanese people that created some of these things feel like they're whitewashing a thing. You know, like, I totally understand Akira, for example. Like, don't whitewash Akira. That's obviously not New York, you know?
It's like, it's Tokyo.
Yeah, exactly. It's called Neo Tokyo. So, like, that's like, obviously, don't do that. But then you look at something like Sailor Moon and it's like, I mean, I'm pretty sure they're white. Like, I'm pretty sure they're white. Like, one has brown hair. Like, I mean, granted, one has black hair, so maybe she could be Japanese or whatever.
Sure.
But, like, one is blonde. I guess the blue-haired one. Is that Mercury? Mercury could be Japanese, maybe.
Oh, she was always my favorite. The one, like, with kind of the bob.
Yeah, Mercury was absolutely my favorite as well. She, but, like, Donatello was my favorite Ninja Turtle. So,
oh, dude, go. Mine too. I love Donatello.
Yeah, Donatello and Sailor Mercury. Those are my favorites.
Because they had computer smarts.
Yeah, totally. So, like, I don't know. I always found that very confusing to me. Because then you see, like, the live action adaptations in Japan of this stuff and they use Japanese actors and they give them, like, wigs with that color hair and you're just, sure, like, yeah, that doesn't look right. Like, is this what you guys want?
And it's like, but it's like, is it because of design? Like, the characters do they just want that character to have big, huge, spiky red hair?
I don't know.
Like, I wonder because I know there's this really great episode of, did you listen to The Nerdist with Alfred Molina?
I did, yeah.
That part where he was like, oh, yeah, the Beatles always sing in American accents.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, my God, they totally do.
Yeah, they do.
I wonder if it's kind of a similar thing where it's like they are drawing, like, American characters.
Well, I mean, yeah, I think they are because that's one of the things – because I swear I've heard – I don't remember where I heard this, but I thought I'd heard that the way the animation style came about was that they wanted their characters to be more expressive. But the problem is that in animation, most of your expressions come from eyes. And if they draw themselves, their eyes are too small to, like, build in, like, sort of like the subtleties of emotion in animation where everything, sure, kind of, yeah, has to be big, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so they found themselves drawing everyone with, like, bigger features, which made everyone sort of American looking.
Yeah, sure.
And, like, that's where, like, anime style came from. I forget where I heard that, but I swear that was what I heard.
Maybe it goes back to what we were talking about with Tim Burton, where it's sort of like a Japanese animator's expression of what their idea of American like expressionism was in, like, the 50s.
Yeah. I mean, it would make sense. It's all very dramatic and over the top.
Yeah.
That's Americans.
Sure, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, so I don't know. It's interesting, but I really would. I think it would be really cool to see like a live action Sailor Moon kind
done,
of thing.
Done right. Done yeah, wrong. Done, right. done wrong would be terrifying.
Oh, it would be, yeah. It'd and be I mean worst. Part of partially it's problematic just from the name alone, which is kind of lame. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, Sailor Moon.
Sailor Moon.
Yeah, it's a little lame. But I mean, it would be really cool to like do like a fully updated like live action, like TV show, like a Buffy style
yeah,
kind of
like,
thing.
She's like kind of a spoiled, airheaded teenager.
Yeah.
But then she learns bravery and courage and
yeah.
And there's a talking cat.
Yeah. Talking cat. Every time I think of a live action talking cat, my mind immediately goes to the cat from Sabrina.
Oh no. Yeah. I have a special place in my heart for Salem.
Yeah. Salem.
Just cause he's so, so weird looking.
Yeah. Oh, you know, what's super weird is, you know, growing up watching Sabrina, the Teenage Witch, the show. And yeah. now I'm reading that Afterlife with Archie thing.
Yes.
And they just did an issue that was completely about Sabrina the Teenage Witch. It was like issue 6 or something. It was like a standalone about her being in a psych psych ward.
Mm-hmm.
Because she says like, oh yeah, I'm a witch and all of this, and her doctor is like trying to convince her that all of that was not real, and like she's not a witch, and you know, zombies did not attack Riverdale. In fact, Riverdale's not even real. Like, none of this is real. Like, you
made it all up. It's like that episode of Buffy.
Yeah, it's kind of like that episode of Buffy, but her doctor is H.P. Lovecraft. His name's Dr. Lovecraft. And it turns out that he is actually she's actually the Bride of Cthulhu. It's like this crazy thing. But what was interesting about it was like reading that this every once in a while they would talk about stuff that like the, you know, Hilda and Zelda, her two aunts, like she would talk about them, and then yeah. she would talk about her crush. I forget what his name was.
That guy. Yeah.
Yeah. But like she said his name and I was like, oh, the guy. And then she would talk about Salem, her cat. And I just like, oh, that's so weird.
So
like,
they're making
I knew all of this stuff having never read a Sabrina comic ever.
You know, what's great is like that, even if who knows if that was in the comics, but even if it was, like, they're incorporating canon.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, no, that's part of it now.
Yeah.
Where it's kind of like Christmas. Like if we only did OG Christmas, it would be totally different than what happens now.
Yeah.
Like we incorporate new stuff and then that becomes Christmas.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. What's so in closing, and we talked about nostalgia to open with.
Yeah.
In watching this part of our childhood, the Ninja Turtles sort of being resurrected to varied results, is there an IP that you yourself would like to be handed the keys to?
There was. It's already taken. It was Power Rangers.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was I had a pitch for that. Like, I had a whole thing.
Yeah.
That I wanted to do with that. I don't think that's going to happen now.
Someone shitty is writing it. Wait, no, someone good's writing it. Someone's good writing it.
Yeah, someone good is writing it. Someone shitty is in charge of it.
Okay.
Yeah, Robert Orsi's in charge of it. It's being written by the guys Stenz and Miller, I think.
X-Men First Class.
Yeah, X-Men First Class, right.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
So
it'll at least be decent, I would hope. It should be, like, fun or something.
Jason's blood will, like, power, like, Lord Zedd's.
They were always meant to be Power Rangers.
They were always meant to be Power Rangers.
I always wondered why I wore the same color every day.
Have you noticed you always wore blue and you always wore pink? Trini, you always wore yellow. Turns out, like, the Angel Grove, like, the mayor of Angel Grove is, like, paying Lord Zedd to attack parts of the city that he wants to, like, tear down anyway. And then, like, the Power Rangers have to take down, like, the mayor of Angel Grove.
I wonder how they're going to deal with the race thing.
I don't really think it needs to be. It's such
a campy thing. You know, like making the Asian girl the Yellow Ranger and making the black guy the Black Ranger. Like, it's,
you know, what'd be funny is if they were like, you know, it's like, you know, Jason, you will be the master. You know, you will be the master, or you will be the Tyrannosaurus Rex, and Billy, you will be the Triceratops. Zach, you will be the Mastodon. That's the black one. Yeah, I'm the Black Ranger. No, you're the Mastodon. You have the power of the Mastodon. Yeah, but it's the black one.
Didn't Funny or Die do a whole sketch about that?
There's no way that hasn't been mined for.
Yeah, for I'm pretty sure. Like there was a sketch where Zordon is giving out like the Power Ranger things, and they do it to Zach and Trini, and like they give it to Zach, and he's just like, Zach, you will be the Black Ranger. He's like, why am I the Black Ranger? And he's like, oh, it's just a coincidence. It's fine. Trini, you will be the Yellow Ranger. And then finally, like, they're just like, okay, what the fuck? They're all just like, whoa. And I think it's called Zordon. Is Zordon racist or something like that? Is the sketch. It would have been Power Rangers without a doubt.
Because it's not really actually offensive. It's just a weird kind of gross coincidence.
Yeah.
Because,
yeah.
Like,
I would hope so anyway.
Well, sure, because, like, I'm not going to fully talk about it, but, like, besides the fact that it's, like, the Black Ranger, there really wasn't ever anything differentiating Zach from any of the other Power Rangers. It was just, like, a weird coincidence, you know?
Yeah. Well, and I mean, I think. And I'll just say this because it's never going to happen now. Like, the biggest thing that I was going to do, that I was going to change with that whole idea, it would be like, instead of making, it would have been about, so like Zordon makes this team, right? And mm-hmm. He says, like, in that first episode, he's like, and really at the beginning of every episode after that, he says, you know, get me five teenagers with attitude, right?
Yeah.
Which is just like the so best. Early 90s. Yeah. It's ridiculous.
They need to be extreme.
Yes. Get me extreme teenagers. anyway.
Max from Goof Troop.
Yeah. So I always thought it was weird that I was like, so I always took that as a kid. It's like, I need the best, you know, the best five teenagers, like the five teenagers that are the most worthy of being Power Rangers. Like, that's how I always took it as a kid. Kind of like, you know, Thor. Like Green Lantern, sort of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I always thought it was weird that in all of the world, the very, very best teenagers, like the best five people that could be Power Rangers, were all living in Angel Grove and were all best friends and were all in the same building at the same time.
Yeah.
When they were pulled out. And I was just like, Alpha, how lazy do you have to be? Like, so my idea was always that, like, make it a real multicultural thing where they come from all over and, like, have it so that, you know, like Kimberly is a cheerleader and that's like where she gets sort of like her gymnast thing, and like give them each like a specialty, like she's like really good at flipping and stuff like that.
Billy's a genius.
Billy is a genius, so he never fights. He only ever fights with weapons that he builds. Because I always thought it was ridiculous that he could fight. It made no sense. Like this goofy guy could fight.
Yeah.
And so it make him from like MIT or something. You know, like he graduated early and got into MIT, so he's like super intelligent. And then you have Jason is like a boxer from like Philadelphia or Brooklyn or something. You know,
he's already like a felterweight. Like he's already like in it.
Yeah, exactly. And then you have Zach is like I always thought like it would be cool if like Zach's like dad was like a crime lord in England. You know?
Yeah.
So like he's kind of like Cockney a little.
Sure.
I thought that would be cool, and I thought like Trini would be cool as like maybe like her like mother is like an awesome like thief or something, you know?
Sure, yeah.
Like a jewel thief or something, and so like she like learned from her mom, and so she like is really cool. So you have like a scene where she's like she like steals something and is like running for the police, like as she gets taken away by Zordon.
She's like, oh shit, and then like the thing happens where they get like
so like I don't know, I just thought it always bugged me that they all came from the same place and were already friends, and so like I love the idea of them all showing up and having no idea who each other are, where they are, what's going on, like, and then sort of like building this weird family from all of these people that don't belong together.
Yeah.
But Zordon, like somehow, like Zordon and like whatever the power behind Power Rangers, you know, knows that they're destined for greatness.
Yeah. And then like kind of dealing with that.
Yeah. Yeah. That was always my take on it. Like, I thought that would be a really cool way to do Power Rangers, as like a more mature thing, like storytelling standpoint.
I sure. suppose. But then keeping the like same, like, oh, that'd be cool if they have to relocate though to Angel Grove because that's where Zordon is.
Right, yeah, that's what that's part of what I was thinking too. And so, like, it was the idea that like they all had to relocate and have like these secret identities,
like exchange students.
Yeah, at Angel Grove High School, except for
Kimberly.
Billy.
Oh, Billy.
Yeah, except for Billy, who would just like be working at the command center all the time.
Sure, yeah,
And doing stuff. And I thought of like this really cool scene where. The villain, I pictured like the villain being Goldar in the first movie.
Mm-hmm.
And because you would have like Lord Zedd or whatever.
Rita.
Yeah, well, I always pictured Rita as just like, I mean, she's basically Morgana Le Fay.
Yeah.
That's like, and so like the legend of Morgana Le Fay is actually Rita Repulsa.
Okay.
It's kind of like the same person. And like the Knights of the Round Table were like one of the Power Rangers.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were a Power Rangers crew back in the day.
Like OG Power Rangers.
Right.
Merlin was Zordon.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. You get it. And this is the fifth Power Ranger team in history. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's Alpha 5, because Zordon builds a new robot every time they need a new Power Ranger team.
Yeah.
So he is version 5 of
the Alpha program.
I thought of like a really cool scene, because the other thing that really bugged me was that like how do you take the Zords into everything, like if they're like this galactic force or whatever and they've been around for a long time, like why, where do these Zords even come from? Because they never really explained it before. Zordon's just like, yeah, I got these things in the ground, hold on, I'll get them for you. like that's it, you know, there's no explanation. I thought it would be cool if, you know, they fight like the Putty Patrol and Goldar like regular, and then at some point like Goldar gets big and they're just like, ah, what do we do? And then like Billy's just like, oh well, I've been working on these things, and then he takes him to like this huge like missile silo kind of thing, and he's built the Zords like in the silo, like, and they're just like standing next to them, and he's just like, here we go. Like, I just love the idea of like Billy inventing the Zords.
Yeah, totally.
And then the other thing was like the dinosaur angle, which was always like the thing I was most confused about. It was just like, yeah, it's dinosaurs because dinosaurs are cool, but like, how do you explain that on the world? And then I was like, oh, dinosaurs were the first Power Rangers.
Oh, like the first five?
Yeah, the very first five were those dinosaurs, and so they like use like the spirit of like old Power Rangers to like give them their power. That's like where it comes from. You know, and so they do it in out of respect, like that's where,
to honor the first,
right, to honor the first ones. Yeah,
so it's like you all are given like the power of the first Power Ranger.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, and all of the Power Rangers since then, so like, yeah, the first four Power Rangers. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh man,
I know, right?
I really like that.
Yeah, so
I've always wanted to sort of do Power Rangers but without calling them Power Rangers, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And kind of like a loving homage, you know how like every,
oh yeah, like, we've talked about this before, because yeah, totally. Kevin Ziegler, the guy who's drawing the inside, the comic book I'm writing, mm-hmm. he wants to do a comic book like that really bad.
Me too.
Yeah, so do I. We've been talking about it since we met.
Let's do it.
I would love to.
Because, like, how many fucking teens in a van solving mysteries are there?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, yeah, we all know it's Scooby-Doo, it's Dune Buggy Man. What's his name? What's the Dune Buggy's name?
I don't remember. Mystery Machine?
Yeah. No. Remember the Dune Buggy that was like, like he would talk like that?
I don't know.
He was in pain. He was always in misery. He was in Wacky Races. Or, you know, like Josie and the Pussycats. Like, they would solve mysteries. Or, like, Jabberjaw. Right. you know?
Right.
We could totally do like a team of teens in like suits.
Yeah, definitely.
Put it on the wall.
Okay, we'll do it. But for now, let's go work on our other thing.